Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding, whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. Today I'm joined by Diavolt Lowe. Diavolt is a counselling psychologist based in Cape Town, South Africa, and currently works as a remote therapist at ORI, a private eating disorder clinic in London. Diavolt has extensive experience with adolescents and adults in inpatient and private settings, and has observed the unique mental health challenges that often go unnoticed in boys and men, which can make it difficult for them to embrace therapeutic environments. Diavolt joins us today to discuss eating disorders in boys and men for our Eating Disorder Awareness Week special, and to shine a light on how we can support more boys and men get to the support that they need. Hello, Diavolt.
Hannah, so such a privilege to meet you all the way from Cape Town, South Africa.
I know, it's amazing. I was listening to a podcast earlier. It was The Diary of the CEO, and Richard Hammond was like freaking out about the fact that you can do things all over the world and like meet people. And this is it. Like, it's
just
amazing.
That we can have this conversation from all over the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And South Africa is 2 hours ahead, is it?
Yes, you're right. So, I mean, we are doing this now. I think it's 6 o'clock your time, but it's 8 o'clock my time in the evening, yes.
Amazing. Well, hopefully you won't get too tired. I'm already feeling snooze from a day of work, so we'll try and keep it exciting. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me. I think it always feels special when we do an Eating Disorder Awareness Week podcast, because, you know, it's always a issue or concept that maybe hasn't been explored as much as it should have been or spoken about as much. So I'm really glad that we're able to have this space to talk about it and to have you with me. So I wondered maybe if we could start with thinking about some of the stereotypes around eating disorders and in boys and men. And this is such a broad question. But what do you think are some of the stereotypes that exist for eating disorders in boys and men?
Yeah, that's such a good question, because, you know, I think there's so many myths and stereotypes in eating disorders in general. Hey, so if we now think about men specifically, I think the main one, it still is, that a lot of people think that eating disorders, it's a female illness. It's still a female illness only, and that men don't have eating disorders. They can't have eating disorders. And I think it's a complex issue. I don't know where that necessarily comes from, but and we'll definitely unpack this today. But I also think there's a stigma that men and boys don't care about their appearance. You know, they're not really connected to their feelings at all. And I've heard before, and there's some research also that suggests that, that there's also a stigma that men who have eating disorders, that then means that they are also homosexual, for example. So it said something about their sexuality. I think that might be a component. And then we'll talk about this today, but eating disorders definitely look differently sometimes in men. It can, you know. And as we know with eating disorders in general, we often focus on anorexia nervosa still. Well, there's so many, there's such a broad spectrum of eating disorders, even in each type of eating disorder. And men does not necessarily always fit that clinical picture of, well, at least maybe sometimes anorexia. So, I mean, these are just some of the stereotypes that I think we need to talk about and continue educating about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're so right. I agree. In terms of kind of, you know, what comes to my mind first when I think about the stigmas, and that is that eating disorders are a female, I think even a young female, and a white female issue, because I think people. But even if we just think about anorexia, that's not true. But I think, like you say, people do just turn to anorexia. And I have a distinct memory of I had my uncle round and we were chatting about me doing this podcast. And I said that I'd had this guy on that had an eating disorder and had binge eating disorder. And he was like, a man had an eating disorder. Yeah. Yes. And then like the concept on added on top of that, of like what on earth is binge eating disorder? But I think within that as well, you're so right in tying in the sexuality component in that, you know, if you are a man with an eating disorder, you must be gay because, you know, you can only be gay. I'm sorry, you can only have an eating disorder and be a man if you care about your appearance. And, you know, that's quite like a feminine trait, I guess, that people expect. And actually, you know, there is no sort of sexuality, gender, race, whatever. It's age, it's nothing that kind of determines what an eating disorder is. But it's interesting what you said about, like, you don't know, like, we're not sure why that, where that comes from. And my only thought is sort of, is it that women in the past, maybe like you said, men stereotypically don't talk about their feelings, so women maybe have spoken about it more and then it's got kind of more support? I don't know. Do you have any more thoughts about why that is?
Yeah. I mean, I do think there are differences, for example, when it comes to personality from a psychological point of view, you know, when it comes to, to genders. We know from a neurobiological point of view also that females tend to be a bit more connected to their feelings, being a bit, you know, a bit more aware of social judgment, for example. And I think culturally, the woman's body plays a different role for her in her life than I think, while for a man, once again, hey, we are generalizing so much here, but traditionally, it was more about status and power and achievements. While for a woman, unfortunately, you know, we're looking at these labels of, you know, appearance, being beautiful. So I think it all plays a role. And then, of course, maybe also toxic masculinity that we can also unpack a bit later. But I think all of that makes maybe it more prevalent in females. Well, we know that from the research. Hey, we know that, yes, females are more likely to develop an eating disorder. That we know. But I think we should not be all or nothing about it. And that's what often happens here, that we then say, and therefore men don't have eating disorders at all. That's not the case. And we must also remember when we look at these prevalences, that's only who we see seeking help. It's only who we see in treatment. And I think there we've got a lot to say about men in general.
Yeah. And I was literally just going to say, you know, obviously the research and the prevalence rates suggest that eating disorders are more common in women. But, you know, can we actually say with 100% certainty that they do? Because are men coming forward for support and for treatment? You know, do the signs and the symptoms look the same as they do in women? So are we beating it? Are we able to recognize them? And I think, you know, treatment facilities and things like that are geared more towards women.
Absolutely.
Somebody told me the other day that with autism diagnosis, one of the questions that they will ask is, does your child move a car back and forth on the floor, like roll the car back and forth? And automatically, you know, cars, if we're generalizing, tend to be more of like a toy that a little boy would play with.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And so naturally the parents are like, oh no, my child doesn't do that. But if you said, does your child continuously brush a doll's hair, it might be that you might recognize that more. So it does make me in girls, because they would always say
good point,
more common in boys. So it does make me think, you know, is it that we're kind of not asking the right questions? And I guess on that point, do you have any thoughts about kind of the signs and symptoms of eating disorders in men? Do you think they are the same, or do you think they're different in boys and men?
There's definitely some differences. So if we think about eating disorders in women, usually thin is better. With men, that's not necessarily always the case. It can be, but we definitely see with men, there might be more desire to be muscular, but still lose fat. It's usually that combination. Even in my male clients who's got anorexia nervosa, even they often don't necessarily fear gaining weight, but there's the desire to be more muscular, but then still being overly restrictive, and that's why they often, you know, land up getting the diagnosis of anorexia nervosa or being underweight. We also see with men that they tend to struggle even more with exercise than women. A lot of men might be athletes, and they might actually start restricting or eating clean, or they might start because they want to actually improve their athletic performance, and that then, you know, gets out of control and develops into an eating disorder. And then men with eating disorders are two times more likely to have substance use disorder in comparison with females. I mean, in general, men tend to have a higher prevalence when it comes to substance use, and especially alcohol. But we see that combination that even increases that even more. And then we've got some unique features that's unique to males, like often we see low testosterone, erectile dysfunction, low sex drive. Men seems to be less concerned about the weight number, and often more, this is maybe the conversation about muscle dysmorphia, but more concerned about, you know, physical appearance, being bigger, being more muscular. If I think about bulimia nervosa, men tend to compensate by exercising instead, in the majority, generally. More exercise, less purging vomit.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Limiting lax diffuse that we see often more in females. And then I think from my experience, also a lot of men, they have difficulty to define a large amount of food and that feeling of loss of control, because I think it's often seen as for example, bulking. So they don't necessarily experience that loss of control that I often hear from my female clients. So those are some of the differences. I also noticed that men does not recognize eating disorder symptoms, and they're quite unaware of the eating disorder even developing, while a lot of my female clients know what's going on, and they become more secretive about that, trying to hide that. While for men, it starts out just a coping mechanism as a solution.
I think that's really interesting. I think I want to go back to the muscle dysmorphia thing in terms of like the things kind of like going unnoticed, maybe things like bulking and stuff. And this might be not a popular opinion, but it's just something that's been like niggling at me. Is I know that the research is, there's a lot of research recently coming out about muscle dysmorphia in men and all of that. And I think there's been quite a big focus for Eating Disorder Awareness Week, you know, talking about gym culture and things like that. My only concern is that it's that generalization again, and that kind of brushstroke of, you know, oh, men tend to be more concerned about, you know, muscularity and being toned and you know, having low body fat, and I'm, you know, if the research points that way, cool, but I just think whilst we have this opportunity to talk more about eating disorders in men, would it not be a great opportunity to really shout about the fact that any eating disorder can, and it's a really difficult thing to tread. And I've spoken to my friend George about this so many times, because he is doing his PhD on muscle dysmorphia and masculinity. So he's like, yeah, we've got to talk about it more, which I completely agree with. But I think my concern with talking about, we definitely need to talk about muscle dysmorphia, don't get me wrong. But, you know, men can still have anorexia, binge eating disorder, bulimia.
Absolutely.
And I just fear that as a society, we're going to now get to a point where women, because of diet culture, have a drive for thinness, so they have anorexia, and then men want to get lean and muscular, so they have muscle dysmorphia. Do you think I'm being dramatic, or is it that,
no,
you know, men, yeah?
No, I think you're spot on. I think muscle dysmorphia draws attention because it's, you know, it's quite unique to men, I think. Well, unique in the sense that the prevalence is higher. We don't see a lot of those intentions in female eating disorders, but you are 100% correct by saying it's not the only eating disorder that a man can suffer from. And let's also remind ourselves that it's not even a formal psychiatric diagnosis, muscle dysmorphia. It's not in the DSM. It's you can't claim from the insurance, you know, under that code. It's not a formal psychiatric diagnosis. It's It's like orthorexia.
Does it come under body dysmorphia?
Sorry?
Does it come under body dysmorphic disorder?
Well, body dysmorphic disorder, that's a recognized psychiatric disorder, but not muscle dysmorphia.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I hope I didn't say the wrong thing, but that's what I mean. Yeah. So body dysmorphia, absolutely. But I want to actually just talk about the word dysmorphia, because there's a lot of misconception about that word. I've got so many clients coming to me saying that they've got body dysmorphia. And what they mean by that is that they don't like their body. And that's not what it means. There's a big difference between body dysmorphia and body dissatisfaction. True body dysmorphia means that you've got a distorted perception of your body. You don't see your body accurately, and you often have actually poor insight about what's going on. So according to you, there's really something wrong with often a part of your body, maybe a nose, or you get really obsessed with that. It can be weight, can be generalized dysmorphia also, but it's really distorted. It's not the same as often the body dissatisfaction that we see in an eating disorder, where there's a real hate often towards the body. And because often those clients, not in all cases, might see their body quite accurately, but they still don't like what they see. And with muscle dysmorphia, we've got the same problem. Muscle dysmorphia means that the man wants to be more muscular than he is because he thinks he's not muscular enough. Well, often he is actually already quite muscular. So once again, very important to distinguish between the difference between body dissatisfaction and dysmorphia.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point to make, actually. And I think you're so right in that. I think sometimes the lines get blurred when people are dissatisfied, like you say, with their body, as opposed to actually having a distortion about it. And then I guess just kind of going back to muscle dysmorphia, because I think it is definitely really important to talk about it. For me, one of the reasons I think that maybe eating disorders in men and maybe muscle dysmorphia isn't picked up as much is the normalization of it. In a sense, you know, similarly to diet culture and the normalization of weight loss and all those messages, I think the messaging around muscularity is very similar in that, you know, no days off, rest is for the weak and things like that. And I actually used to powerlift, which meant I was in the gym a lot and kind of, you know, there was a lot of that gym culture. And bulking and cutting were not seen as an issue. Like if you were, you know, bulking and eating really excessive amounts of calories, that was just totally normal because you were just trying to get muscular. But if you were cutting equally, that was totally fine because you were just trying to get lean. And I think that is such an unsafe environment because those kind of processes can be so dangerous, but it's so normalized. And I think also things like steroid use and excessive exercise, it's so easy to think that they're normal things to do and it's okay to want to change your body in quite extreme ways purely because when you go into the gym everybody else is doing it, so you know, what's the bother for me to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it reminds me of a lot of the general themes we see in eating disorders in general, and that is that the obsession, the amount of time it starts to take up, And also just the underlying intention, you know, the fact that I need to change my body to be okay with myself. I think for me, that's also the problem here. And once again, we're not saying, just like with females, we're not saying you can't be an athlete or you can't enjoy exercise or you can't even do some of those things sometimes excessively. Like it's required often in professional for professional athletes or some careers. this is a psychiatric illness. This is something that takes over your life. It impairs functioning. You start to give up relationships because you need to be in the gym. You start to hate yourself and experience significant feelings of maybe guilt or shame if you weren't able to, let's say, compensate or exercise today. So I can't diagnose today by, you know, just talking about this. It's a severe illness that needs to be diagnosed by a thorough assessment by a professional.
I think it's really interesting because if I think about, you know, my gym, I feel there are a lot of people that wouldn't want to miss an exercise session and would prioritize going to the gym over socializing and have very strict diet regimes. And like, you know, their physique is sort of the core of their personality. And I think I always used to ask the question of like, where do you draw the line and stuff? But I guess I still am asking that question, because is it that those people probably have an eating disorder as well? Or do you think there's a line of like, you know, how much it impacts your life personally? You know, if you're happy with that structure and how you live your life, then it's okay. But if you're not, maybe it's a disorder. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts around that?
Yeah, it's a complex answer, probably. I think my question always for clients would be, even if they're really into this and they really enjoy it and they really love it, and usually people will say they also love exercising, you know, so it's usually something they really enjoy. My question would be, do you also have other coping mechanisms, or is this the only thing? And if I take it away from you, let's say we go on holiday and you need to take a break from exercise, would you be able to cope? If you've got no other way to manage emotions, because that's eventually what an eating disorder becomes. Say we use our eating disorder to manage our emotions, whatever those emotions might be. If you've got no other way to do that, for me, that would be problematic. And I think at the moment, unfortunately, there are, if we look at gyms here in South Africa too, in Cape Town, there's a lot of people, I can't say they've got eating disorders necessarily, but definitely a lot of people with quite unhealthy relationships with themselves, their bodies, and exercise.
How would you say that we kind of support people in feeling like they can talk about this sort of thing? Because I think often, and maybe this is, you know, you mentioned earlier about sort of the aspect of toxic masculinity, and maybe this is where we can tie this in, but I think often what I've observed in my male friends is that they don't want to appear like they have an issue, because almost having an issue such as an eating disorder appears weak, and they want to be sort of like the strong one. And I think when you tie that into the gym culture, you know, you want to be the big guy and the tough one and stuff like that. So when it's so normalized as well, I think it then makes it even more difficult for people to say, actually, I have an issue with this, when they can see their friend next to them appears to be totally fine with kind of living the same sort of life as them.
Yeah. It reminds me of what we always say in treatment, that, you know, it's not just about the food, it's about the feelings. And I would say, if you are concerned about someone, for example, be honest with them, but don't start necessarily by talking about the exercise and the food and the weight. Just ask, just be a friend and ask, how are you?
Casino. Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus. Moto Casino. America's social casino. Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Doing, like, how are you doing? And build a relationship and listen. Because I do believe that if the space feels safe, they will allow the support. And I think there's not a lot we can do if we don't have that relationship with people, you know. I think that's the best place to start. If I think about toxic masculinity also, does it play a role? Do men want to feel dominant and, you know, independent? Might be. I think that might be one of the reasons why a lot of men delay seeking treatment. Don't want to be dependent on a professional, or want to really believe or portray that they can help themselves. Maybe they want to appear strong and, you know, not weak. But I'm not sure, you know, the last couple of years, as you know, we've made some progress with gender inequality, for example. And the lines between masculine and feminine roles and those ideals are actually, those lines are less defined. It's a bit more blurred. There's an overlap, you know, or at least more than in the past. I don't know, is that why, and we haven't spoken about this, but we're actually seeing an increase in eating disorders under men also. And is that maybe why we're seeing that? We don't have clarity about that yet. And maybe the other question would be, what does it mean for men when their role changes? You know, when... I think we're all rooting for that. We're all rooting for you know, being equal. But how does it impact men internationally? Do they sense a loss of control? Can that drive the eating disorder behavior? Do they want to now, maybe, do they have the desire to be physically superior? I don't know. I would be surprised if it's almost that simplistic as that. In my experience, every time when I had a male in front of me, or a boy, I even have a boy of 10 years old at the moment in my private practice, and he struggles with some problems with food and relationship with his body. Every time when I sit with a man, they're not really talking about those themes. What they talk about is the trauma they went through in the past, or this young boy is being bullied, you know, and called names for being, you know, fat or whatever they call him. So it often goes back to that. And I think when we think about that, for me, that's very similar to when I deal with female clients. It's ultimately about, how are you doing? What's going on in your life? And what do you need then this eating disorder for? I can't, or maybe I don't want to, but even with my female clients, I don't think it's that simple as, I just want to look good. It's about appearance. I want to look, you know, tough and strong. For me, there must be something deeper.
I couldn't agree more. I think, like you said, it's probably not a simplistic answer, because I don't think any eating disorder is a simplistic answer.
Yes.
And I think the stereotype or the stigma of eating disorders are purely, you know, so that people can control the way that they look and the way that they appear to people. That may be an aspect of it, but then I think you can often go even further than that in, like, I want to change the way that I look because people will respect me more and I have no self-worth, or, you know, I will have more friends because I currently feel really lonely and stuff. So I think it's never ultimately just as simple as saying, you know, I just want to, you know, muscle dysmorphia, let's say, I just want to get more muscular. Like, why do you want to get more muscular? What will that provide for you? And, you know, how will that build up yourself? And I think that's like a really important thing to discuss about the fact that, you know, eating disorders ultimately aren't really about the food. The food is obviously an element, but it's almost, in a couple of podcasts ago, we were talking about how the eating disorder comes at a time when somebody is quite vulnerable. And at the time, it's a protective factor. It's there to look after you because, you know, it does just kind of maybe numb the pain, take things away, gives a distraction, all of that sort of thing. But I don't, and maybe for some people it does start out as, okay, you know, I want to lose a bit of weight, so I'm going to, and then you fall into the trap of an eating disorder. But I think that's kind of, that's not the general theme. It's more that there's something somebody feels is missing and they try and fill that with an eating disorder. And that's, I would say, generalized to males, to females, to whatever eating disorder that somebody's struggling with.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. It's almost like the outcome. The food and the weight and the behaviors are the way we try. Exactly like you said, it's what we use to make ourselves feel better in the moment. And it often works, you know, over the short term. It makes us feel better, but it doesn't live well. And an eating disorder becomes a problem when it doesn't live well anymore. And things start to fall apart. And we need to get to the root of things. You know, it makes me think, the last 6 months I was shooting a TV show here in South Africa where we really help people with eating disorders, you know, changing their lifestyle and helping them and supporting them. And I was the psychologist on the show. And I was just reminded again after talking to six of the people on the show, just the amount of pain and trauma and heartache they've been through. And I was expecting that maybe, but I was just, I was almost taken aback by how each one's story was driving that eating disorder. It was just fueling it. And they had to go there. They had to, you know, I always say you can't go around feelings. You need to go through feelings. They had to go through the feelings. They had to really just feel it and be it. And it was tough, and I cried with them, you know. But it was so important. It is so important for the healing process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think often part of that is also you have to go through it to be able to trust that you can go through it. I think a lot of the time people think, oh, I can't possibly, you know, live this life without my eating disorder. You know, maybe I'm not strong enough, and I'm not brave enough, or whatever. But you have to kind of go through it to realize I can do this on my own. And you never are actually on your own, because you've got, you know, loved ones around you or clinicians and things like that. But I think, yeah, I think it is really important to highlight that aspect of, you know, it's often come from a place of being vulnerable, and the eating disorder is kind of a perfect storm for that.
Just with men in general, I don't think us men like to be vulnerable. I don't think it comes natural for us, you know. Not only do I think we necessarily want to be portrayed as strong, I just think it's never been modeled to us, you know. What does a vulnerable man looks like? I remember when I studied psychology years ago, we were probably 60 females in the class. Or let's say 16 total, and maybe I think we were 3-4 men in the psychology class. And it's happening all over the world when we look at psychology. And this is the field of being vulnerable. It's a field of, you know, delving deep and looking at your feelings. So I don't think we've had good role models, you know. A lot of fathers, a lot of men in the family, unfortunately, sometimes not non-intentionally, still act out what they've seen in the past. And it's maybe a generational consequence that we are still sitting with. And we are making some progress, but we still have a way to go.
I couldn't agree more. I think that, and I mean, this is not my belief. I work in the psychology field myself, but I think there's a general stigma that psychology is the soft science, and it's the science that we look at emotions and things like that, and that is the more feminine science. And then when you think about things like maths or physics or engineering, things like that, they're the sort of, you know, hard sciences, that they're the more male dominated areas. And I just only have to think about my course when I was at university. And I think similarly, I mean, actually, I think there was about 120 students in total, and I think there was 3 males, which is crazy. But also when I because I studied biomed at undergrad as well, and that was also seen, you know, biology, psychology, they're sort of, you know, and it was the same. But I do think we're making a shift. And I think, like you said, it's definitely a generational thing. I think sort of my sort of generation, our sort of generation, are moving towards that. Like you said, the blurred lines between gender roles and things like that. Yeah. But even still, my dad is a very, you know, appearance-wise, he's a very masculine man. My mum always says that he's a man's man, and we have a saying in my house, like, "Oh, if dad can't fix it, no one can." And I think in my life, I've seen my dad cry once. So for me, fortunately, I have a lot of male friends that have really given me like an open eye of the diversity of characteristics in men, and I'm really appreciative of that. But growing up, you know, it was dad will fix everything. And dad's hard, like dad doesn't have many emotions, whereas, you know, mum is the one that I go to when I need emotional support. So I think, you know, if I felt that as a female, almost as a spectator of, you know, the male population, I can't imagine what it's like. And then also as a man, you know, if that's what your dad is like, you then that's, like you say, that's your role model. So you're like, okay, I can't be emotional, I've got to be the one that, you know, gets stuff done, and you know, my wife or partner or whatever, they will be the one that's allowed to be emotional and have those sorts of
things. Yeah, and exactly like you said, I need to be a man's man. I mean, even if we think about that saying, hey, and we say that, people say that, growing up hearing your mom say that about your dad, we as a boy, you might assume that's who you need to be, and it means certain things, you know. So one other thing I think men find very helpful when they seek treatment and they go through treatment is the fact that we can talk about all the different ways that we can express our masculinity. I remember I did a group, actually, therapeutic group in an inpatient clinic once, just talking about how we all have masculine and feminine traits. We all, and it's so helpful when you can be in touch with both sides. And we don't want to demonize or hero the one side and demonize the other side. So idealize.
So. Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
A lot of men find it helpful when they realize, no, you know, I don't have to put that pressure on myself to be something from a Marvel superhero movie, I can, that's only one version of a man, but I can also be that version and that version and that version. And it's freeing for them.
Yeah. And I love that. And that's something that I'm coming to discuss a lot in my therapy personally recently, is that you can be made up of so many different parts, and we are made up of so many different parts. So yeah, you can be the, you know, physically strong man, and you can do stuff like that, but you can also be vulnerable, and you can have other people protect you and look after you, but then you can also be creative and intelligent and so many other aspects to you, just not just sort of like, you know, the strength or the weakness. It's very, like you said earlier, it's very all or nothing, which I think is a very eating disorder way of thinking. Definitely. Anyway. I guess you mentioned it slightly there in terms of the group that you led, but also in terms of treatment, how do you think that we can adjust treatment? So one, it's more accessible for boys and men, but then also, I guess, a bit more useful, because I don't know how much use it is currently, because it's quite feminine focused.
You're right. We're not doing very well when it comes to treating men with eating disorders. There are some places they can go, but it's really in the minority. I think the first thing we need to do is continue having these conversations. We need to just raise awareness, because men are often uninformed. You know, if you talk to a male with an eating disorder, they feel so isolated and alone, and they often ask themselves, "What's wrong with me?" Because they've usually never met any other male in their life with an eating disorder. It's not in their frame of reference, so they feel very maybe ignorant about it, but also just unsupported. And then we need to look at early prevention. You know, we know that men specifically go into treatment at a much later stage of their illness, which is a pity. You know, we want to treat them as soon as possible. We want to treat all eating disorders as soon as possible, because then we know it's easier to help people. So we need to, I think clinicians also are quite bad at screening and diagnosing eating disorders in men. It's often overlooked. You know, when you think about a male, you look for depression, you look for ADHD, you look for alcohol use. You don't think about eating disorders. I think that must change. That's very important. And then, like you said, some treatment centers don't even take men. So that's problematic. I remember I know about a lot of inpatient treatment centers. If you've got a treatment center full of females, it's often quite difficult to bring in one male into that center, and it's also not really helpful for him, because he feels quite isolated, and who can he relate to? So they often then just say, sorry, it's a female center only. And we know from the research that men are more open in men-only groups. So we need to create spaces where at least it's not female-centric. It reminds me of the old diagnostic criteria before 2013, where one of the criteria was actually that you did not have your period for a certain amount of time. So it was purely based on female symptoms. So we need to make language more gender neutral. And ironically, which I think is the good news, we know that men actually, if they do receive treatment, have a higher success rate than females. And I thought about this, you know, I thought, why would that be the case? And the research suggests that maybe, you know, predominantly males often can be quite goal-orientated and self-directed. And I think they come into treatment also with that mentality, want to check the boxes, which can sometimes not be a good thing. But we see that treatment helps, you know, for both men and females. So it's vital. There's a lot we still need to do. But I think having these conversations is a good start.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting what you said about the amenorrhea and losing your period, because that just shows, you know, that's 10 years ago, but that just shows that's only just become a realization that, you know, that men can get anorexia too. And I suppose, without generalizing, because obviously not everybody with an eating disorder loses their period, but is there anything for men that are certain signs or symptoms that people can look out for if they are concerned about an eating disorder?
I mean, the main thing that comes up for me would be not unique to men, but would be isolation. I think that's definitely something. I think for the men themselves, I've got a lot of men in therapy who's extremely alone. And this is something that I think as a culture, we don't talk about a lot. Men experience a lot of isolation and feelings of being alone, and it's not something they feel they can express also. And then what I often see, not in my first session with men, but after maybe session 5 or 6, that they will start talking about the sexual dysfunction, erectile dysfunction. And we know that dysregulated eating can definitely influence testosterone levels. So those are symptoms that's quite unique to men. I think a lot of the other symptoms we get in men's mental health in general, we know that men sometimes tend to be maybe more irritable, aggressive. When they start to struggle, they like to, or they tend to act out in that way. But no, the best way is to have open conversations, because just like with females, eating disorders can be hidden so well. It can be something that can continue for years. And most people who engaged in those behaviors for a long time know also how to protect themselves, I guess, you know, because the eating disorder becomes like your superpower. It's the one thing you use to cope and to make you feel better. And that's the same, I think, for men. So we need that solid relationship with people and that open communication.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you're so right in that eating disorders do thrive in isolation. And I really like that you said that rather than, you know, maybe something physical, because I think all eating disorders do thrive in isolation and sort of, you know, like you said, people keeping those behaviours maybe to themselves. And I guess in men, you know, like if it is less recognised because we don't talk about it as much, it can go unnoticed so much more easily. And just be completely normalized. So I think that's really important. But also, you know, just discussing that aspect of sexual dysfunction and things like that. And I think a lower sex drive, they're just really good things to be aware of, in that if that is happening, you know, it probably is a sign that something's wrong. And it, like you said, it might not be an eating disorder. It may be something else. There's another mental health condition, but it's good for people to be aware that can be linked, I guess.
I think a last thing that the healthcare system can also continue working on, and we're getting there, but we're not there yet. We know that men actually score low on eating disorder screening tools, questionnaires, even when they have an eating disorder. And it's for the same reason that we said earlier, that the question is, the screening tools are often more geared toward female symptoms. So it will ask questions like, do you fear, you know, gaining weight? When was the last time you had your period? So men will score no on a lot of those questions, and then they are missed. So there's a lot of work for us to do. But I think
there are some new screening tools. Somebody, Dr. Charlotte Ord, has written a blog through eating disorder awareness week for us, and there are some new screening tools for eating disorders in men.
New ones. I think it's going to take a couple of years to be.
So just to finish us off, I just wanted to ask what you guys at ORI are doing for Eating Disorder Awareness Week. I've seen the hashtag Remember Your Bros, and I just wanted to ask you guys what that was all about.
Yeah, we're actually busy with an Eating Disorder Awareness Week, and we've got this abbreviation, BROS, and it's it obviously has all the letters BROS, and the B stands for Banter Mindfully. So be mindful of your use of language around obviously appearance and weight and the way we talk about other people and ourselves, often in front of others. The R stands for recognize responsibility. So notice your role and the opportunity for early intervention, even if you're not a professional, you know, just to be that person that can have that relationship with someone, be the ear that they can listen to and maybe make a recommendation and be that support for them. And then the O is to observe behaviors. So pay close attention to radical changes of behavior. Don't dismiss or minimize, but really pay attention. Support and signpost. So take action and with kindness. I think that's always the ORI way, to do it with kindness. And the signpost is to refer to external support if you feel really needed, if you are concerned.
Yeah, amazing. I think it's such a good acronym, and I think it's such a good way to round off the podcast, because it's literally like, what's your top tips for supporting somebody with an eating disorder? So yeah, I think that's brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you and to speak to you, and to have a really interesting conversation about eating disorders in boys and men. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Hannah, it was amazing. And if people want to maybe have a look at ORI's website, it's ORI-UK.com. We're also on Instagram, ORI_UK. So there's a bit more about events and workshops and everything we're doing for Eating Disorder Awareness Week, and also anything going forward. So please have a look. And yeah, it was lovely to meet you. Hopefully we can do this again.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And I'll put links to all the different events that ORI are doing in the show notes. So, yeah, I will let you go and have your evening. Now it's quite late. And yeah, just really appreciative of you coming on. It's been great to meet you.
Thank you. Until next time. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode. So be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.